Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today we're going to learn about vitamin K can help reduce arterial stiffness and improve blood pressure. Who says? University of Leuven in Belgium, in an article published in the peer-reviewed Journal of American Heart Association. That's one of about 13 articles that we'll be sharing with you, all from mainstream, respected medical journals, all from respected institutions. Why do I emphasize that? Because every day from around the world, new people are coming on board. And if they did not realize how much scholarship and research goes into preparing the material for the books, articles, investigative reports, white papers, documentaries, lectures that are done, then if they went to Wikipedia, they would have a completely different and very negative impression. And since over 250 million people a week minimally go to Wikipedia for their information, then we have to hope that word of mouth spreads the truth. And you can download all the information that we share every day, plus dozens and dozens of other articles, and so that you have good information to share with others. In fact, today we're going to share two videos, one with Cheryl Atkinson, where she interviews a Justice Department prosecutor whose own son became autistic after taking the vaccines, but then found no help whatsoever within the Department of Justice. Remember, it's the Department of Justice that we the people pay to try to attack and undermine the credibility of any parent bringing in a child's story of how they were injured by vaccines. And they win most cases. And you're not allowed to appeal. And you can't bring in experts on your side. It's extremely argumentative. So much so against the victim that we'll be doing an article on it next week. But then suddenly something unusual happens. The government has used the same expert, a pediatric expert, on vaccines, considered the top one in America, and he's the one who has put the kibosh on countless numbers of parents getting proper compensation. But then he does something unusual. He meets privately with the lawyers for the Justice Department, the people who normally bring him up as an expert, and he testifies, parents lose, and he says, "You're wrong. There is an association between vaccines and autism." Immediately that day, they fire him after all of his years of work. And then they try to act as if the information he shared did not exist. They covered it up. This is hiding information. And then he writes an affidavit, and they don't share the affidavit with anyone. You'll hear about it for the first time today. If that's not enough, a very unusual scientist. He holds four advanced degrees, PhDs, from MIT. And he's going to tell you about the immune system in ways that no one else has. Had he been allowed to testify before every one of the state legislatures considering or advocating for mandatory vaccines, there'd be a completely different outcome. But he is not heard. He is virtually invisible. And so you're going to hear from him today about how the vaccines cannot be proven to confer immunity. It's all a lie. Now, within the next few days, we will have finished a major article telling you the truth about what they say behind closed doors, they meaning the leading vaccinologists in the world, like the head scientist for the World Health Organization, the top vaccine expert in the world, under oath in a deposition. The leading vaccine scientist at a World Congress, the World Health Organization annual Congress on vaccines, where they weren't aware that this would ever be made public. They completely contradict themselves. So we're going to show you all the contradictions within the people heading the vaccine movement to show you what kind of fraud it is. Sooner or later, the average American will wake up and stop vaccinating their children before doing their homework. Then if you want to vaccinate, it's your business. You're going to hear and watch both of those. And to watch anything on our channel, all you have to is the following. You'll go to, and many of you, the majority of you are listening to this program over the internet right now. So what you'll do is you can watch the videos as we play them by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. That's youtube.com/PRNFM. Also, Jesse's going to come in the studio in a little bit because I was just informed that we have some very good information to share with you about how many of you are listening. Could you imagine that of the documentaries we produce just on YouTube, the latest count is 7,400,000 people watch these videos? That's a lot of people watching videos. So people are getting the information. Sharing it with others is important. And by the way, you can go to the archives anytime, 24/7, download program 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now the latest in health and healing. A study published in the Journal of the American Heart Association found that improving your body's vitamin K levels can significantly reduce arterial stiffness and improve blood pressure. It's not hard to do. It's easy. You could take a 1 or 2 milligram vitamin K1, 2, and 3. That's one way of doing it. Or you can just have a healthy plant-based diet because that's where you're getting a lot of your vitamin K, especially out of your green vegetables like spinach, broccoli, kale, collard greens, arugula. Yeah, easy to do. Now, spending at least 2 hours in nature per week improves overall health and psychological well-being. That's according to University of Exeter, which is United Kingdom, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Scientific Reports. You've heard me advocate many times that we have to be in nature, but also be silent in nature. Why? Because of the distractions that we actively seek, and especially the younger generation, it's very difficult, not for all, but for the majority, to stay on point and focused on something away from their electronics. To read a book, to watch a symphony, to engage eye to eye in a conversation without any distraction. The same is true in nature. When you go into nature and you can sit and enjoy the presence of all the green around you, the trees, the shrubs, the water, or the desert, different energies, different ions, the ocean, that helps you. And immersing yourself in nature is enough to positively affect you. And that's according to this study, but it's about a minimum of 2 hours a week. They studied 20,000 people in England and those who were in nature and those who chose not to. But let's say you don't have the benefit of getting very far. Then just go to your local park. And isn't it amazing what we could do if we were really creative and got away from the politics of all things? Imagine going into Detroit, Camden, Compton, Newark, and you have thousands upon thousands of abandoned buildings and factories. What if you were able to get permission with a foundation to tear those down and put community parks? Parks where people could go, community gardens. Now, this is not uncommon in some countries. In fact, in Denmark and some of the Nordic countries, they're now coming up with fruit that is grown for anyone who wants to pick it. Just on streets. Everywhere you go, they're going to have all kinds of fruit. And the idea is to be conscious. Don't go out there with a bushel basket, as someone recently did on my property. You talk about insensitive, selfish. Wow. It takes a year at least to grow some decent lemons. It takes a lot of fertilizing. And the guy took the entire tree, took every lemon off two trees when I had a walk-in refrigerator already with lemons and even organic lemon concentrate. But not everybody gets it, and they won't. They either have that capacity to think or they don't. It's not something you're going to teach people. Only after the fact. How many times in your life has someone says, oh, now I get it. Now I get it. Oh, it was right in front of me. Now I get it. Too late. If the only way you learn is by now I get it, you're never going to get ahead of any problem in life. But that's a different issue. Here we're talking about being able to enjoy something without taking it all for yourself or just taking advantage of it. For example, I went to a store the other day to buy some fresh-grown produce because they're known for having their own organic garden and they grow some great produce. But you got to get there early because they don't take the field heat out. If you don't take the field heat out, it wilts very fast. And how you take the field heat out is you take a bucket of ice water, and as you harvest lettuce, you just dip it into that ice water and it takes the field heat out. It'll last a week or longer. In any case, at nighttime when they close down, they don't take all that stuff in. They leave all these plants that they sell there, and nobody comes and steals them. And that's pretty cool when you think about it, but that's the way it used to be. Now people would steal the store. You come in the morning, there'd just be an empty lot. Someone took it. Why are we, not everyone by any means, but why do we think that it's normal to have people have to lock their doors and have to fear others? Here's a question for you. I'm going to open the lines up a little bit for your response. We now supposedly have this woke, as in verb, culture. And it's not being used in the way that it actually historically should be used. But in any case, we are supposed to believe that a tiny fraction of individuals, generally people who have contributed nothing to society, younger people, who have 100% confidence in their attitude and have no life experience, but they know better than anyone else, they're leading the drive for identity politics, divisiveness, censoring people. They want to be able to say what they want to say at the top of their lungs in someone's face. And I've seen it. You've seen it. But they don't want you to be able to share your point of view, no matter how constructive it may be. They feel threatened by everything. And therefore, there's an emotional minefield always present wherever they're at, what they can arbitrarily trip to engage someone. We have a whole new way we're supposed to act in a politically correct manner. Think of the lack of humor in whole groups of people in our society because they find nothing funny. Everything that should be funny is now offensive, and therefore you should be shamed for it. They do not care for tradition. Now, I grew up in an interesting family. My mother was very liberal. My father was more conservative. But in a historical context, both were constructive in this sense. For my father, he taught us the meaning of living within our means, of not being envious of other people who have more, but rather appreciating what we have. He believed in sharing. He believed in the strength of a community came from those people who contributed to it. And therefore, you should always look for the person who has less to help them. And he was responsible in that respect for always seeing that if there was someone going through a rough time in our community, that quietly there would be a small group of people get together, and whatever it was that they could do to help that person in need, they would do so. And that was just taken as a given in our church. He also believed in people's rights to express themselves. I'll give you a simple little example. It's really simple, but it stuck with me all this time. We were going to go to the carnival. I was about 10 years old, and there were three of us. And so he said, where are you going? We said, we're going to the carnival. And he said, well, come here for a second. So we went over the table, and he said, you're going to go on the rides? Oh, yeah. You've been over there and looked at the rides you want to go on? Yeah. Okay. So which ride you going to go on? So we each told him the rides. And he said, well, how many rides can you go on? And we had already, of course, calculated that. The rides we wanted to go on, we'd go on two or three times. They were a dime, and an expensive ride was a quarter. He says, put all your money out of your pockets on the table. And so we put our money out, and he said, well, that's interesting, because Tony doesn't have the same amount of money as you, Tom, and Gary. And so what would it be like if two of you were on a ride, or one of you is on the ride, but the other two couldn't afford it, so you had to stand and watch the other person on the ride? How would that feel? Hadn't thought about it. Well, would you want to go on the ride with other people, or you want to go on the ride by yourself? No, we'd like all to go on the ride together. Okay, then why not just put all the money in, equally divide it, and that way you are on the same ride. Simple little lesson. But you don't forget those little lessons if they've made an impression on you. Believing in family and extended family and looking at the best of the traditions that have been passed down and seeing how you can incorporate the best of those into your life today. My mother was very liberal. She believed in liberal causes. She believed in the freedom of the individual. She believed in women's freedom. And as a result, I grew up understanding that it shouldn't be one against the other. It should be looking at the best of each and using the best of each and excluding that which is not applicable or no longer desirable or realistic. And yet today, there are people who will say, I don't trust you, I don't like you, I don't believe you, I don't want nothing to do with you because of your being this or that. I think that is so self-limiting. And it also lacks humanistic values. Wasn't it Martin Luther King who said, what? Do not judge a person by their color, but by their character? Oh, and by the way, tonight, I'm going to be doing a very interesting discussion on Martin Luther King by a person who knew him probably better than anyone else I know. And his name is Pepper. He spent 25 years of his life out of his own pocket looking at the truth behind Martin Luther King's assassination. And he gave us insights into James Earl Ray we never knew. I played a segment of that yesterday on my program. Well, tonight, Pepper is in the studio live. And we're going to talk about something that never gets discussed. If Martin Luther King were alive today, I will bet anything that he would be skewered, banned, demonized, and attacked by the liberal community. Certainly by the corporate leftists. Because he was back then. Did we forget that? Did we whitewash history? Did we eliminate all that truth? Does the average person know anything about Martin Luther King's life, except what they have been, what's been codified in the memorials? No. Well, tonight you're going to learn about Martin Luther King from a completely different point of view by someone who's a close personal friend of his, and not one of those good friends that ended up exploiting their position with King. No, someone who deeply cared for the man, who's still alive and who can tell the story. So a different approach to Martin Luther King tonight. In any case, my larger overarching question is this. What do you make of a culture that is so quick to condemn, so quick to attack, and so quick to exclude, whether it's on Facebook or Google or Wikipedia, in the media? The people who are supposed to be protecting freedom of speech are the ones who are then exercising censorship. The people who should be allowing forums for open and honest debate and discussion are the ones who exclude people. Abby Martin was just excluded from a major lecture at a South Carolina college because she refused to sign a declaration supporting Israel. Did you know every member of Congress, including Bernie Sanders, signed that damn thing? Knowing all that we know or should know, does that not just stand in stark contrast as to what a person should be able to do without signing some allegiance? So what do you make of this? The identity politics, the people who yell the loudest rarely do anything constructive. They know what they're against. I've yet to see what they're for. It's very easy to condemn everything within a society. It's a different story to find positive solutions in spite of all that is wrong. And I've yet to see any of these people do anything constructive to make it a better world for others. And then I look at their backgrounds, and they don't come from poverty. They come from privilege more often than not. What else does that tell us? Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your comments. All right? I just posted today a piece on my personal Facebook. It involves Elizabeth Warren. And it was from the Fordham Law Review. And in it, you can go there and see it for yourself. It says that we need more women, minority women in academia, especially in departments of law. And the best example of a woman of color, and it said a woman of color, is Elizabeth Warren, 1995. And she's now the first woman of color professor of law at Harvard. But it was a lie. It was cultural identity theft. Fully aware that she had no proof of that. And that's one of a thousand things that she's lied about. And yet, she is just the top of the heap of selectability for the corporate Democrats. What does that tell you about what's going on in our society? Anyhow, I put a lot of those up on my website so people can see something more of the truth. Now, to finish off on health today, from Keele University, which is the United Kingdom, new research finds a close association between high aluminum content and amyloid beta. That's the plaque that's laid down in your brain that can lead to, and does lead to, dementia and hence Alzheimer's. So think of all the aluminum you're getting, not from what you eat, because most of that's 99% is passed out of your system, but what's injected, such as in the vaccine, or the mercury fillings in your teeth. And one of the things you're going to hear this PhD, in fact, 4 degrees from MIT say, is that why in the world are they not talking about how toxic aluminum is in the brain of children? And this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Also, consumption of leafy green salads improves cardiovascular health postmenopausal. Arizona State University, and published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Nutritional Research, quite simply it means this. If you are a postmenopausal woman, a higher risk of cardiovascular disease than men to begin with of the same age, and because it's partly because of loss of estrogen, and also which promotes vasodilation through nitric oxide, and if you eat your greens, the more greens you eat, the less likely you are to have that happen. So protect your heart with salads and juicing. And light therapy on your immune cells helps with the side effects of cancer therapy. This University of Freiburg in Germany, and this is published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and light therapy, especially malignant melanomas, which have been treated with immunotherapy, and can help with the side effects of the regular cancer treatment, which is important. And finally, the last thing today is childhood trauma may lead to adult disease. This is even from the CDC. So the health officials find a strong link between early instances of childhood trauma and adult chronic diseases, ranging from heart disease and asthma to kidney disease and depression. So at least they're acknowledging what those in epigenetic sciences have known for a long time. How then do we reverse that? That'll be for an in-depth discussion coming up with Bruce Lipton on my show, How Do You Reverse Trauma? And, oh, by the way, if you have high blood pressure, from Donggang People's Hospital in China, published Nutrition Review, a meta-analysis, which is many studies, found quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin, apples, onions, your two best sources or supplement, you can reverse high blood pressure naturally. And that is terrific. I'm Gary Nall. We are now 25 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going directly into a discussion with the PhD on the hidden truth about vaccines. Please stay tuned.
Vaccines. There's little dispute about this much. Vaccines save many lives, and rarely they injure or kill. A special federal vaccine court has paid out billions for injuries from brain damage to death, but not for the form of brain injury we call autism. Now we have remarkable new information. A respected pro-vaccine medical expert used by the federal government to debunk the vaccine autism link says vaccines can cause autism after all. He claims he told that to government officials long ago, but they kept it secret.
Yates Hazelhurst was born February 11, 2000. Everything was normal, according to his medical records, until he suffered a severe reaction to vaccinations. Rolf Hazelhurst is Yates's dad.
At first, I didn't believe it. I did not believe that vaccines could cause autism. I didn't believe it.
This is today's hard reality for Yates. The trademark brain disease, pain, and inability to communicate that's common with severe autism. In 2007, Yates' father sued over his son's injuries in the little-known federal vaccine court. It was one of more than 5,000 vaccine autism claims. Congress created vaccine court in 1988 in consultation with the pharmaceutical industry. In the special court, vaccine makers don't defend their products. The federal government does it for them, using lawyers from the Justice Department. Money for victims comes from us, not the pharmaceutical industry, through patient fees added on to every vaccine given.
Our hearings are all closed to the public. And that's statutory.
In 2007, Yates's case and nearly all the other vaccine autism claims lost. The decision was based largely on the expert opinion of this man, Dr. Andrew Zimmerman, a world-renowned pediatric neurologist shown here at a lecture. Dr. Zimmerman was the government's top expert witness and had testified that vaccines didn't cause autism. The debate was declared over.
But now Dr. Zimmerman has provided remarkable new information. He claims that during the vaccine court hearings all those years ago, he privately told government lawyers that vaccines can and did cause autism in some children. That turnabout from the government's own chief medical expert stood to change everything about the vaccine autism debate if the public were to find out.
And he has come forward and explained how he told the United States government that vaccines can cause autism in a certain subset of children. And the United States government, the Department of Justice, suppressed his true opinions.
Hazelhurst discovered that later when Dr. Zimmerman evaluated Yates as a teenager. That's when he partnered with vaccine safety advocate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has a voice condition.
This was one of the most consequential frauds, arguably, in human history.
Kennedy was instrumental in convincing Dr. Zimmerman to document his remarkable claim of the government covering up his true expert opinion on vaccines and autism. Dr. Zimmerman declined our interview request and referred us to his sworn affidavit. It says on June 15, 2007, He took aside the Department of Justice, or DOJ lawyers he worked for, defending vaccines in vaccine court. He told them that he discovered exceptions in which vaccinations could cause autism. I explained that in a subset of children, vaccine-induced fever and immune stimulation did cause regressive brain disease with features of autism spectrum disorder.
This panicked the two DOJ attorneys, and they immediately fired Zimmerman. They called, that was on a Friday, and over the weekend they called Zimmerman and said his services would no longer be needed. They wanted to silence him.
Days after the Department of Justice lawyers fired Dr. Zimmerman as their expert witness, he alleges they went on to misrepresent his opinion to continue to debunk autism claims. Records show that on June 18, 2007, a DOJ attorney Dr. Zimmerman spoke to told Vaccine Court, "We know Dr. Zimmerman's views on the issue. There is no scientific basis for a connection between vaccines and autism." Dr. Zimmerman now calls that highly misleading. The former DOJ lawyer didn't return our calls and emails. Kennedy has filed a fraud complaint with the Justice Department Inspector General, who told us they don't comment on investigations or potential investigations. Meantime, CDC, which promotes vaccines and monitors vaccine safety, never disclosed that the government's own one-time medical expert concluded vaccines can cause autism. And to this day, public health officials deny that's the case.
Based on dozens of studies and everything I know as a physician and a scientist, there's no link between autism and vaccines.
CDC declined our interview request. In addition to filing a fraud complaint, Kennedy has delivered Dr. Zimmerman's affidavit to leaders on Capitol Hill. But there, he claims, is another key part of this story: roadblocks set up by the pharmaceutical industry, or pharma.
Everybody takes money from pharma, so they've all been corrupted, and it's almost impossible to get anything done on Capitol Hill.
Kennedy, a Democrat, isn't the only one claiming vaccine industry money rules the day. We spoke to 11 current and former members of Congress and staff who claimed they faced pressure, bullying, or threats when they raised vaccine safety questions. Several of them agreed to appear on camera.
There's no question in my mind whatsoever that the pharmaceutical industry had a great influence with people over at the CDC and FDA. There's no question in my mind.
Republican Dan Burton, former chairman of the House Oversight Committee, has an autistic grandson.
I am not against vaccinations.
He pursued vaccine investigations in the early 2000s. Beth Clay was one of his staffers.
There was a lot of pressure from people on the Hill.
When you say people on the Hill were exerting pressure, what kind of people? Colleagues?
Well,
or
colleagues. There were pharmaceutical lobbyists. The pharmaceutical lobbyists had, you know, they're the same people that have been entrenched. They can walk into any office on Capitol Hill, and they'll talk to staff, they'll talk to members, and they'll encourage them to discourage our investigation.
At the risk of stating the obvious, why do they have that kind of access to members?
It's money. I mean, if you look at the donations over the last 20 years, the pharmaceutical industry, and Republican and Democrat, they're nonpartisan. They put money everywhere.
Former Congressman Dr. Dave Weldon, a Republican, says he got the message loud and clear.
If you would want to hold a hearing on an issue like vaccines and autism, your own leadership might fight you on that because of the financial influence the pharmaceutical industry has.
No, they wouldn't fight you. They would kill it. It's dead. They don't even want to discuss it. It's dead on arrival. If you as an individual member want to take on the pharmaceutical industries, it's forget it.
Can you describe an incident or just how that would go?
It would typically be in a hallway or on the street, and you know, people would come up to you and say, you know, you really need to, you know, back off on this. It could be bad for the community or bad for the country or bad for you.
Weldon says he's generally pro-vaccine depending on the patient and the shot, and gives flu shots to adults. We asked him to review Dr. Zimmerman's new affidavit.
I found his affidavit and testimony through that affidavit to be consistent with my opinions. Some children can get an autism spectrum disorder from a vaccine.
Republican Bill Posey is a current member of Congress.
I don't have to tell you that that industry is a very, very powerful industry. Matter of fact, I don't know of anyone more powerful than that industry.
Posey says his own party leaders twice promised to hold hearings on the topic, only to scuttle them in the end. Hazelhurst, who happens to be a criminal prosecutor, was scheduled to be a witness at one such congressional hearing. 2 weeks before the hearing in 2013, he briefed congressional staff.
I presented at that congressional briefing, and I explained in that hearing, if I did to a criminal in a court of law what the United States Department of Justice did to vaccine-injured children, I would be disbarred and I would be facing criminal charges. I think that scared the hell out of them.
The hearing was abruptly canceled. Meantime, Dr. Zimmerman...
Okay, so that is some outstanding reporting from Cher Atkinson. Needless to say, she's been pillared, 5-time Emmy Award winning investigative journalist from CBS Network, and on Wikipedia, they just trash her nonstop. Here's how you connect the dots in all this. You heard the person whose son had autism after the vaccines, and he is the Department of Justice prosecutor, and he's saying that the Department of Justice goes after parents and denies them the opportunity to know the truth in their own lawyer's Department of Justice, relying upon a pediatrician who says, yes, vaccines can cause autism. They fire him, hide the information, and continue denying thousands upon thousands of claims for autism. You also heard Dan Burton. I filmed Burton, and I filmed the woman who was speaking on behalf of Burton, Miss Clay, in Washington, D.C., for the film I did on vaccination, and his last hearing was in 2012. And the people speaking under oath lied, and they were called out for lying. Nothing happened to them. Now, you heard Posey. He's a representative from Florida. He was given tens of thousands of documents from that were directly from William Thompson at the CDC, who oversaw the vaccine trials in the MMR vaccine back in 2000, 2001, 2, 3, and 4, and said there was no connection. But on the telephone to Brian Hooker, whose own son had been vaccine damaged, and Hooker's a professor of science at a university in California, had that unusual phone call, because normally when you file Freedom of Information Act request, it's all paperwork. In this case, Thompson actually called him, and after several conversations, acknowledged in one of the conversations that he felt guilty because he helped lead all of the scientists on vaccines at the CDC in covering up information that they knew that the MMR vaccine would cause a 224% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American boys 36 months and younger. Now, if you're a federal official and you're sued, you're protected, you're indemnified, but not if you commit a crime. And so Posey was given the information by Brian Hooker, and Hooker had gotten the information from William Thompson. He recorded all these conversations. We've played these recordings where he actually acknowledges committing a crime against humanity. When he just said he's tried on two separate occasions to hold hearings, meaning bringing the CDC people in, including Thompson, to testify under oath, all the other legislators, left and right, refused to allow it. In my case, being on PFW Radio, one of our sister stations, for 36 years, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I would go down there regularly because it was such a good station with such outstanding programming and managers like Lou Henkin. And I would do big lectures filling up George Washington University's auditorium and movie, and all the funds went to the station. And one day, in a packed civic auditorium. In fact, it was so packed that there were like five screens down a wall so everybody could see the film at the same time. A gentleman came up after me, and I'd watched him. He'd been waiting in line for several hours afterwards. And I was asking people to speed it up, give me one question only, because I had to catch an Amtrak train, the last one back to New York that night. And so he waits till everyone else is gone, because I saw him get out of line several times. And he finally gets to me, he says, Gary, he says, I just want to let you know I listen to you every day and have for decades. And he says, I can't tell you who I am, but I will tell you this. You actually underestimate how vile and evil and corrupt the entire city and its bureaucracies and government agencies are. He said, I work for one. And here's how it works. You go play racquetball early in the morning. You know that no one's wearing a wire. Nobody can record you. You have plausible deniability, no paper trail. And so you talk with a person representing a special industry and with a legislative top officer, like a chief of staff for a congressperson, and especially if they run a committee, and especially if that committee oversees your industry. And so you make promises, say, how much are you making now? About $100,000, $125,000 a year? Well, what if I started you off at $500,000 a year plus a Black American Express credit card, which had unlimited balance? Any car you want to rent or lease, we'll pay for it. All the trips to places where we have corporate headquarters and apartments in New York City, Los Angeles, Miami, you get to go whenever you want. And that's just the beginning. You could be making $1 million a year within 3 years. And then suddenly a piece of legislation just rolls right through a committee and becomes a law. And later, that person quits. Nobody knows it. Nobody's aware of it. And ends up as one of these paid people in one of these corporations. That's how it works every second of every day in the most septic city on earth. So what you were hearing was the frustration of people who saw the truth, and it didn't matter what the truth was. Those in power dictate how it will be used. Your thoughts on that? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And I believe we had a call in here while we were playing the video. So you'll have an opportunity now. All the call was just dropped. If you want to call back, please do so. If you have thoughts upon why, what is happening in a country, because I travel a lot. I speak with a lot of Americans outside of New York City and Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. There's the rest of a country. And I can tell you, they're not happy with what they see going on in the world. They're not happy with their values being trashed. They're not happy how everybody amongst them has been exploited. They're not happy about the payday loans, the high interest, and the college debt, and everybody profiting who can and held to no accountability, and the average person held to full recourse. So the double-tiered of responsibility and the outcome in our society, they're not happy. And yet we're tone-deaf in our media, tone-deaf at these think tanks, tone-deaf to the Washington consensus, all living in bubbles, entitled bubbles, privileged bubbles. They have no idea. That's why Ricky Gervais was so accurate when he says, don't get up here and pontificate, because you don't know what you're talking about. You're not a part of the real world. And he was right. But the media isn't part of that real world either, or at least it pretends it's not. So that's that. Now, while we're waiting for calls to come in, I'm going to share some additional thoughts. Here's a question for you. And this involves, this is not for all the syndicated stations, and I apologize for just taking a few minutes on this. This is exclusively for our sister station, WBAI in New York. The station is doing all it can within its means to raise money to pay its bills. But there's a catch-22. And the catch-22 has been around for a long time, long before the current program director, station manager, any of the people who are doing their best, long before them. And it's in no part due to, and I won't get into all the causes, but the people who want to take control of the station because they want to make the station their image, and they were very radicalized, engaged up to their eyeballs in identity politics. And so they changed the programming and they changed the management, and it went downhill from there. So here's the catch-22. In order to have a successful fund drive, you have to be able to set aside the amount of money needed to pay for the premiums, which is generally what we call 10 to 1, meaning if something costs you $10, your cost, you would offer it for, let's say, $100. You'd make $90 profit, and the person would then be paid their $10 a publisher for the book. But here's the problem. There's so few listeners at the station at this point, and especially after the coup that took us off the air, probably cost us 30, I'm guessing around 30 to 35% of our total listenership when we weren't able to be heard, none of us, locally, for 4.5 weeks, that there's not enough people pledging in order to pay all the necessary bills. Now, there are some bills that are necessary, like rent, salaries, electricity, phone, insurances. You must pay those first. So when it comes time to pay for the premiums, there's not enough to pay for all the premiums. Some, yes, but not all. And therefore, what has happened for the last many years, unless we do special events like a lecture and a premiere or a retreat, where we've paid for over 5,000 premiums, my office has personally, you don't get your premium. What can change that? What do you suggest that we can help the station raise enough money to pay all of its bills and pay for the premiums so the premiums can be sent out in a very timely manner? I'd like to know what your thoughts are. Constructive thoughts, not blaming. We're about solutions today, not blame. Because you'd have to go way back. You'd have to include Amy Goodman and a lot of other people if you're going to start blaming where all this went south. So we're not about blaming. We're about positive solutions to help us go forward. I'd like your thoughts. Dan from New Jersey. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hello. Gary, thank you so much for the brave exposés you do constantly. I'd like to suggest a way that many of us could show our frustration with our government for forcing these dangerous vaccinations on us, as well as the atrocities our military conducts overseas. In all of our sports events or gatherings, or I should say in many of them, they will ask people to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. We could show our frustration by not rising. Stay seated, and if people ask you why you're not standing, tell them about these things.
Okay. I appreciate your input. We're always interested in what people have to say. I might add something that Martin Luther King said, and we can learn from this wonderful mind. He said, "Night already devoid of stars, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Principles that we could learn from if we chose to be open to them. So thank you very much, Dan, for your suggestion. Your turn. If you'd like to share your points of view on any of the things we discussed today, please do so. Also, I've been informed by one of our in-house counsel, the person who was hired because she's a legal research scholar. Her name is Victoria. And she's the one digging deeply into corporate corruption, corporate crimes, because I'm doing an essay in next week. And the essay is this. If Merck creates Gardasil, which it did, and if Merck also created Vioxx, which was known to have killed a minimally 60,000 people, but the more realistic estimate is 500,000 people, with more than 125,000 with heart attacks and who survived and strokes, and they paid a $5.5 billion fine. Nobody was fired. Nobody was demoted. Nobody went to jail. Their reputations were completely Teflon-proofed, and they knew all along that it would cause that, and they made $18 billion in sales from it. And I know that for a fact because I interviewed Dr. Graham at the FDA, who knew that they had the research while they were marketing the product, even before they marketed it, knowing that it could cause heart attacks and strokes. He was ostracized. He was threatened and he was condemned at the FDA. Hence, the FDA was working on behalf and at the behest of the pharmaceutical company. So then we do research, and let's just say for argument's sake that we find that Merck has settled 100,000 lawsuits. Then why is it the media and the government still allows Merck's representatives to sit on its board and the media is still taking its money? There's a disconnect there. So what we're doing now is we're researching the background of every pharmaceutical firm, every law firm, and every Wall Street firm to show you its true background. And it is a cesspool beyond belief. We're already over 1 million cases that they've settled and or been found guilty on, where hundreds of thousands of people have died and they haven't had to suffer at all. So it's important you know who you're dealing with before you have a plan of action. And so these industries are rife with corruption at every level. Now, some other things in the news today that I wanted to share with you. This is from Cornell University, as published in the Natural Blaze. I highly recommend reading the Natural Blaze, by the way. Science says silence is vital for our brains. That's correct. The facts are that studies have shown that excessive environmental noise, that includes conversations, not only decrease one's quality of life and cognitive function, but also reduce our lifespan. The good news is that spending time in silence can reverse these efforts or effects. So ask yourself this. Are you around people that can't shut up? Are you around noise all the time? Do you always have something on that distracts you? Radio, television? How often do you get out into nature? Because these are quality studies that show the more silence you engage in, the healthier you are. So I thought that was important. You know, that we understand more silence time, the better. Also, do you remember when Obama and Biden tried to cut your Social Security by $230 billion? Well, Benjamin Studebaker does. He says that videos have emerged in which Joe Biden speaks in favor of entitlement reform. And by the way, Social Security is not an entitlement. We pay every penny into Social Security. The government doesn't pay a nickel into Social Security. It's not an entitlement. But Biden disputes the claims. The thing is, Joe Biden and Barack Obama did try to cut Social Security. It's one of the forgotten pieces of Obama's legacy. It was called the, quote, grand bargain. In 2010, the Obama administration thought that the federal government was spending too much money, so they created the National Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform. It was nicknamed the Simpson-Bowles Committee for its leading members, Alan Simpson and Erickson Bowles. And Simpson-Bowles proposed to cut Social Security by changing the way Social Security measures inflation. Social Security is designed to adjust for inflation so that the benefits keep up with rising costs of living. By measuring inflation with a scale that runs low, you can reduce the cost of living adjustment and thereby reduce Social Security spending. The Social Security Administration uses a CPI-W to calculate inflation. CPI-W is specifically tied to the consumer experience of clerical workers, mainly people in working-class, blue-collar jobs. Simpson-Bowles wanted to switch over to CPIU, otherwise known as Change CPI. It doesn't look specifically at clerical workers, but it also makes an important change in the way inflation is measured by increasing the role the substitutions play in the measurement. And hence, it was Barack Obama and Joe Biden that wanted to cut your Social Security. Just so you know, these are the people frequently lecturing us, virtue signaling of what they know that we don't. I just wish people would go back and see how a person who was given the Nobel Prize for Peace created more wars than any president in American history, more regime changes within that 8 years, and never once had the decency and humility to say, I have erred, I should have learned from when I won the Nobel Prize for Peace to act in a manner that was consistent with other people like Gandhi or Martin Luther King and be an example of peace. Instead, I became infused at the hip with the military-industrial complex, and I'm merely a token voice for the deep state. That's a speech he should have given. He didn't, and it's unfortunate we don't look back at all people in power and see what is the true nature of their legacy. Also, I'll be sharing an article that we're writing today. It'll be ready in the next 2 days, and we will go into great depth about why the 1986 vaccine exemption bill should be withdrawn, and why we should put all of our efforts, everyone in America who concerned about freedom of choice, to go to Washington this summer and to protest and to say we demand, not Big Pharma. By that time, there should be, according to the information I have, at least 30 to 40 really good articles on the pharmaceutical industry's corruption, and they're doing all they can behind the scenes to attack everyone, especially myself and others, who speak out against them. We, the people, have to have one voice going forward. If you get rid of that law so they're held legally accountable for accidents and injuries, then all the nonsense on vaccine requirements would change overnight, instantaneously. We'd be saving millions of lives in the future. The next up, by the way, is they're going to be vaccinating adults. That's where they're going next. Also, finally, I'm looking for a personal assistant 3 days a week. Interesting work, because when I'm out of the city a lot, I want to make sure that things still get done on the projects I'm working on. You can call 646-926-5422 if you're interested, and then we'll screen you in Newark and see if you're right for the job. Have a nice day, everyone.